From the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing, China, this is the China in the World podcast hosted by Paul Hanley.
Welcome to the China in the World podcast. We're recording from Beijing, China, where this week we have the Carnegie Tsinghua Carnegie Global Dialogue. We're focused on China, India, and it's my pleasure to have back to China in the World podcast, Raja Mohan, joining us today for the second time on the China in the World podcast. He joined last year during the Carnegie Global Dialogue on China, India issues. Raja is the director of the Carnegie's India Center in New Delhi. He's a leading analyst of India's foreign policy. He's also an expert on South Asian security, great power relations in Asia, and arms control. He's the foreign affairs columnist for the Indian Express. He's a visiting research professor at the Institute of South Asian Studies, the National University of Singapore. And he's previously served as the Henry Kissinger Chair in Foreign Policy and International Relations at the Library of Congress. Raja, it's a pleasure to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice being here again.
We had a good opportunity this week to talk about China-India relations because we're not long after the informal summit in Wuhan between President Xi and Prime Minister Modi. And so it's a good time to really take stock, take survey of the state of the bilateral relationship. But before we jump into that, I wanted to get, you know, you've been watching these this relationship for a long time. Historically, there seems to have been a lot of hope that China and India would develop a much more of a strategic type relationship, but that seems to have eluded the two countries. I wonder if you could give your sense of the trajectory of the relationship up until now.
Yes, indeed. I think in the modern period, as the two largest of the two large Asian nations, two of the oldest continuing civilizations that the world has seen, that at the beginning of the 20th century, there was hope as nationalists in China and in India got together and hoped that the moment of liberation was coming and that together they were going to transform the world. It is that hope that continues to run, but I think tragically that at every juncture when we try to work together, it's really been very, very difficult and elusive, as you said. I mean, you go back to the Second World War. The Japanese occupation of China meant the Chinese were fighting the Japanese imperialism, Indians were fighting the British imperialism, and the attempt at the time by Chiang Kai-shek to work with India didn't come because Indians said, look, our problem is with the Brits, your problem is the Japanese, so we couldn't really collaborate. And again, in the 50s, we thought we could work together, but then as two new nations, the territorial dispute in Tibet and the boundary with Tibet became a problem. And then we had a brief conflict on the border. And then in the 60s, we saw Sino-Soviet split, China go closer to the Americans in the 70s, India went closer to the Russians in the 70s. There again, I think once again, this hope that we can work together did not really materialize. And I think after in the turn of the 1990s, India's Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi and Deng Xiaoping actually said, look, let's put the past behind us, let's work together. And I think we had a 20-year period from 1988 to 2008, where there was a general expansion of the relationship. But over the last 10 years, once again, we've seen problems on the boundary, problems in the region where a rising China's footprint clashes with India's traditional sphere of influence. We begin to differ on the global issues, particularly in relation to the role of the United States. India does not like the China-Pakistan relationship. And then we had the whole problems on the economic front. We really had hoped expanded economic cooperation would resolve political disputes. But then the economic cooperation itself became a problem because of the expanding trade deficit. Yes. India has a trade of $80 billion with China, but 50-odd billion is the deficit. So I think on all fronts, on the bilateral political relations, the economic relations, and on the global situation, we are really at odds. And I think the Wuhan summit was really an attempt to halt the negative momentum in the relationship and start something fresh.
And in the period, the year or two before the summit, 2 weeks ago, the India-China relationship also experienced some pretty significant strains.
Yeah, exactly.
Part of that, as you said, the territorial issues along the border, but also India's inclusion in the nuclear suppliers group and differences there. Can you talk about some of the differences that were presenting themselves in the bilateral relationship prior to Wuhan?
Exactly. I think the problems that were beginning to emerge after 2008 boiled over, shall we say, in 2007. There was a major military confrontation in the northern frontiers of India, where Indian and the Chinese armed forces were at a face-off for almost 2.5 months. It took a lot of political effort to resolve that. India became the only country to oppose China's Belt and Road Initiative, where Indians did not come to the annual
Belt and Road Forum
in Beijing.
And this, of course, is quite sensitive and significant here
in
China. This is a
signature
program that's a signature program of President Xi.
Yeah. And then, then we also had problems on the question of nuclear supplies group, where India was trying to get in. The Chinese would not. Chinese would block India's entry. China is the only permanent member of the Security Council that does not support India's membership of the India's permanent membership. On the terrorism issue, China was seen as protecting Pakistan in the UN. And then the Chinese feel that, look, India has been drawing too close to the Americans, joining the Indo-Pacific Quad, and this whole idea of Asian democracies getting together. So all this came to a head in 2017. And I think what we've seen this year is some attempt at resetting this relationship. And I think the attempt was at Wuhan, look, let's take a deep breath. Let's sit down. We can't let this happen again. We can't let a military confrontation. We can't let the dynamic spin out of control.
And there were two principles that emerged from the summit. Can you talk about those and what they mean in the context of the relationship?
Yeah. I think what President Modi, President Xi and Prime Minister Modi agreed on was really that, look, that they acknowledged that we have serious differences. But what they insisted on was that, look, the differences must not turn into disputes and disputes must not become conflicts. So therefore, management of the differences on a reasonable basis, and that was one principle. The second was the recognition that the world is entering a turbulent phase. Impact of President Trump on great power relations, on the politics of globalization. So he's saying that, look, a stable India-China relationship would be a positive force in the international system. That for both of us who are facing an uncertain environment, if we manage to stabilize our relationship, that's good for us in dealing with the rest of the world. So disputes should not turn into differences, and that India-China cooperation in an unstable world. So these were the two principles that drove the Wuhan summit.
And, you know, those principles are important in terms of thematics to put context to the relationship. But, of course, some critics argue that the problem with the India-China relationship is that there's really not a lot of substance in it in a positive standpoint that can drive the relationship forward. You've talked about potentially economics being that positive driving force. How do you see that playing out?
As I said, if you look at the political differences, for example, the boundary dispute, we've been talking about it for 70 years without a resolution. So what happened in the last few years is really, while dispute was always there, the military tensions have become more frequent. So I think the idea is, look, let's calm the border down. Let's prevent the two militaries coming face to face. Find ways in which we keep peace and tranquility on the border. So on the Pakistan question, I think China's invested a lot. There is the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. It's a long-standing strategic relationship. Similarly, India-US relationship has grown by leaps and bounds in the last 20 years. So neither side expects the other to abandon those partnerships. But I think we must be transparent in what we do. We must be able to communicate to the other, look what our intentions are. So both on the regional and the global dynamic, let's at least have better communication, better understanding of each other's concerns and interests. So it's really in the economic side where...
Can I ask you on the question of Pakistan, China's relationship with Pakistan and India's relationship with the U.S., do I understand you to mean that the basic premise is that China will have a relationship with Pakistan, but it won't prevent the India relationship from developing? India can have a relationship with the United States, but it won't prevent yeah. the China-India relationship development. Is that the approach that the two sides are using?
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, I don't think China can have a veto over what India does with the U.S. So similarly, India can't have a veto over what China does with Pakistan. But I think there's also sense, look, on some issues, for example, I mean, that we should be able to see where the red lines are. So, for example, if the U.S. Sets up a base in India, I'm sure that would be a big no-no for the Chinese. Or if China keeps backing Pakistan's support of terror, that's of a concern for India. So beyond that, that we know that there's a general weight of those relationships will continue, but we should be able to tell each other, we should be able to be honest with each other in terms of where these relationships are going and avoid doing anything that hurts each other's core interests vis-a-vis those two relationships. But it's in the economic domain where the problems are there, but where policy action can produce some change. For example, two issues, I think. One is the trade deficit. India has a $50-odd billion trade deficit with the Chinese. So the question of market access, of course.
That's many quite small, Raja. When, yeah, as an American, when I'm looking at... I'm kidding, but no.
It's one-tenth of what the Americans have.
But it's an issue. I mean, it's an issue.
And for India, I mean, which has only recently become a trading nation, it has a total trade of about... $750 billion in goods, and out of which $50 billion, a trade deficit of total trade deficit of 140, out of which one third of it is really with the Chinese. So I think it's a major thing for India, given its size of its trade, etc. And market access has been a problem for everyone. But I think there seems to be some indication the Chinese will at least try and make sure that where India is strong, pharma and some of these areas where actually we can begin to, Chinese can open up things. Similarly, Chinese have complaints that India does not let Chinese investments come in. They block the Chinese investment and Chinese participation in the Indian economy for political reasons and security considerations. So can India open up its economy to facilitate Chinese investment? Mm-hmm. This is where I think I believe quite a bit of the conversation in Wuhan was about it. So we hope to see some action by both sides that will facilitate better interaction. Mm-hmm. Both sides also agreed that, look, given the uncertainty injected by Trump into globalization, that we need to better tap each other's markets. Because the Western markets are closing because of the political protests. Can we better, take advantage of the India's growing at 7%, China is the number two economy. We've not done enough to exploit the possibilities in the other.
Right.
So that's it.
Right.
But on the Belt and Road, again, as we mentioned, there was a serious problem.
I understand on the economic side, that this is an area that, hopefully I think can be used to sort of drive the relationship forward. And China has expressed concerns about restrictions in India to their investment. Of course, the United States and Europe and other countries in Asia are complaining to China about the same issues with respect to China, China not opening its markets enough, issues related to reciprocity. And intellectual property. Aren't there concerns in India on some of the industries where you could compete here in China? Doesn't India worry about those same set of issues?
Yeah, the basic reciprocity, market access are the key issues. But of course, within the range of specific concerns, for example, we don't argue with China as much on the IP as we do as Americans do.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it's really basic manufactured goods have no place in China. So it's okay. Is there a way we cannot compete? And is there a way China can invest in India? For example, we're beginning to see, not a Chinese company, but the Taiwanese company, where Foxconn is beginning to, planning to invest in India.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the labor costs in China, the India's more interest in making India, beginning to draw some potential participants from China into India, like we have the Xiaomi phone, which is manufacturing
Xiaomi
in India. Yeah. So, but it is something that then still needs some political policy direction in Beijing. But my sense is that the Chinese begin to adapt to the new pressures. They might even do something with other countries as well as with India.
Mm-hmm.
It's really on the Belt and Road, I think the two leaders looking at ways in which to minimize the differences. For example, they say, look, okay, we disagree on Belt and Road. Let's leave the disagreement there. But both of us are interested in connectivity. It's quite central to our national objectives. Therefore, is there a way we can work together? Whether don't call it Belt and Road or you call it something else. So one idea, one concrete proposal that has come out of the Wuhan was India and China should try and do a joint project in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
So there we're not saying, is it Belt and Road? Is it good or bad? We're saying, look, let's sit down, negotiate
with
each other.
It's just a project. It's, not it's just a project. Labeled anything.
Yeah. So if we can work out a project, then if that works out well, so unlike the Belt and Road, which India sees as unilateral, if it is a negotiated bilateral project, whether it's in Afghanistan and in future in Myanmar, Bangladesh or other places, it is possible. So take a practical project-by-project approach rather than the question of framing it in this grandiose terms, whether we support the whole of the initiative or not. Similarly, on Kashmir, where the sovereignty question India has raised, the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor runs through Indian claimed territory in Kashmir. There, I would think it is possible if the Chinese begin to signal neutrality between India and Pakistan on the Kashmir dispute. In the last 10 years, I think we've seen that Chinese tilting more towards Pakistan. If there's some correction from Beijing, then I think India should be far more comfortable with the Chinese projects in Pakistan. So I would say there's room, I think, if there is political will, some of these issues can be, some of the differences can be finessed, some of the cooperation on the economic side can be expanded.
There seems to be more political will from both New Delhi and Beijing. And I have to sort of suggest that there's probably a large geopolitical context over this. Last year, when you were visiting us, we were talking about the new Trump administration and the Trump America First policy. And, you know, you submitted that this could be good for India, but there's also big concerns coming out of India. And so India will have to begin to hedge and lean in some ways more towards Asia and more towards China. Clearly, as you said, you know, China doesn't want to see India outside partnered with the United States. That's not of benefit to China in this era of the revival of great power rivalry. So how much of this is geopolitics in your views? How much of this is as a result of the Trump administration's new policies?
See, on the political side, where I think the Chinese have had some concerns that the conflict with India is nudging India closer to the United States. And I think the Trump administration, in some senses, has been more embracing of India's larger role, for example, in its references to the Indo-Pacific. Its encouragement to the formation of the Quad, and its reference to India as a key partner in the East. Now, that is partly a problem for the Chinese. And for India, we see Trump as far more positive when it came to the strategic and political issues than the Obama administration, in the sense that they're tougher on Pakistan, they're raising questions about Chinese role. But on the economic side, we have the same problems as China has, but on a lower scale. As you said, look, our trade deficit with we have a trade surplus with Americans like the Chinese, but it's much smaller.
Sure.
But the targeting of India on H-1B visas, on the question of immigration, on the question of trade deficits, all these are shared kind of concerns. So there again, that if the Western markets begin to close, shouldn't we be doing more in exploring each other's markets at this difficult juncture? Because if you assume that there will be some correction to the logic of globalization, that the Western countries, where there's so many losers for globalization, will demand some course correction, and that an India-China economic cooperation would then be a valuable asset.
What's your sense? I mean, we heard this week from some of our Chinese interlocutors on how the visit played out, the summit between President Xi and Prime Minister Modi here in China, and, you know, in terms of what was broadcast on the news. How is it playing out in India, and what's your reactions to how we've heard it being played out here in China?
Because I think, you know, China is a state where its ability to shape the general coverage is strong.
Yeah.
So we've seen quite clearly, as part of the commitments made at Wuhan, that you see the way the media is commenting on India is very sharply different from the last 2 years, where there was a lot of negative coverage. So it signals political reassurance from the Chinese side that, look, we mean what we say.
Yeah, the news coverage of it was quite warm friendly, talking about the commonality between Chinese people and Indian people, love for families, and you know, that tells me that there's a desire here on the Chinese side to improve this relationship.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem for India is that, look, India, no prime minister can give assurance on the how the Indian media runs.
Right.
So that Indian media is, of course, is a strange creature of its own. I mean, I don't think it comes under control of anyone.
Right.
So in India, the judgment cannot come from the media coverage.
Right.
So in India, the judgment had to come from the government's policies themselves.
Mm-hmm.
There, I would think India is beginning to signal quite, the government is signaling that, look, we're open for doing things. They're talking about more, signals and guidance, strategic guidance to the militaries to stop, to tamp down confrontation, to work together in the international forum. So I think both sides are signaling in their own different ways that we need to work together.
Mm.
How much of that? And in fact, the general sense is that now the challenge is to translate the kind of understanding at the highest level to the bureaucracies and to implement some of the ideas that emerged out of Wuhan, especially on the economic domain. Can we begin to demonstrate specific things? And I would certainly look for the on the project in Afghanistan and on the question of Indian exports going up a little bit, how the and the India liberalizing rules for the Chinese investment.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting time, and it's a great time to sort of examine the bilateral relationship. As you said, the two sides, there seems to be political will on the two sides to put the relationship on more solid, more positive footing. The two sides have taken a deep breath since Wuhan, looking for ways to manage the differences, but looking for ways to build greater cooperation. And I hope we can come together again, Raja, fairly soon and talk about how things are moving forward since Wuhan. Thank you very much for joining the China in the World podcast.
Thank you, Paul. It's always a pleasure to be here. And I think I learned so much by coming and meeting all your friends and colleagues in Beijing.
Well, you're welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's it for this edition of the Carnegie Tsinghua China in the World podcast. I encourage you to explore our site and see the work of all our scholars at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next time.